Hey everyone, Archipelago Ghosts is back for season 2. But before I get into today's episode, I want to give you an update about a couple of changes here at the podcast. First of all, welcome to all the new listeners who found us from the episode my dad and I did for the Patreon exclusive interview of Rabia Chowdhury's The Hidden Gin podcast. And to Rabia, thanks again for asking us to be on your show. Secondly, if you've listened to Archipelago so far, you'll know that there's usually the first half where I talk about a topic and the second half where Karen interviews someone about Indonesia's supernatural landscape and personal experiences. But from now on, it's going to be a little bit different. The coming episodes will be shorter and they'll be just me telling you about a topic, but unfortunately no second half for now. Hopefully in the future, Karen and I can get back to doing interviews again, but there'll probably be separate episodes that stand alone. So that's it from me. I hope you'll still listen and enjoy each episode, even if it's just me talking to myself. And I'd also love to hear from all of you listening. So if there's something you're curious about, or if you have any questions or whatever, get in touch. You can follow the podcast via Instagram or Twitter at Archighosts, which is ARCHIGHOSTS. I hope to hear from you soon, but for now, let's get started. Welcome back, friends. Selamat datang, teman-teman. This is Nis, and you're listening to Archipelaghosts, a podcast about the ghosts, supernatural beliefs, and mystical curiosities of Indonesia. Today, I'm going to be talking about something called Tenaga Dalam, and it's a topic that's been with us from the very beginning. Way back in episode 1, you might remember my dad talking about studying a form of this discipline years and years ago. Or you might remember Risky's story in episode 7 of seeing one of his neighbours turning into a tiger. And by the way, you should definitely go check them out if you have no idea what I'm talking about. But the reason I chose to do this topic is because I got a bunch of comments from listeners specifically asking about it, which I thought was pretty interesting. It really wasn't the thing that I would have guessed would strike such a chord with so many people, but as my sister Lena said, give them what they want. And so that's exactly what I'm doing. Tenaga Dalam is translated as inner energy, force, or strength. You might already be familiar with some other Asian practices like Qigong, Tai Chi, or Reiki. But for those of you that aren't, I did a quick look up to get some explanations for you. So Qigong is a system of coordinated body posture, movements, breathing, and meditation used for the purposes of health, spirituality, and martial arts training. It originated in China and is translated as life energy. Tai Chi is a Chinese martial art that's practiced for defense training, health benefits, and meditation. And finally, Reiki, which is a Japanese form of alternative medicine, where they transfer energy through the palms of the practitioner to the patient. This is done to encourage emotional or physical healing. Now, Tenaga Dalam is similar to all of these practices, and it incorporates their ideas with a bit of an Indonesian twist. In general, the knowledge of Tenaga Dalam is the idea of using the energy you have inside you to affect the energy outside of you. The understanding is that everyone has Tenaga Dalam, but you have to train and practice to be able to use it effectively. So in this way, it's kind of like a muscle, right? Everyone has muscles, but not everyone can lift 50 kilos unless they train regularly and build up those muscles to get that strength. So this is how it works. There's positive energy and negative energy in everything, and they're always repelling or clashing against one another. When someone trains their Tenaga Dalam, they're actually training themselves to focus on those two energies so they can instinctively feel the differences between them. Between the positive and negative. Focusing on and feeling those differences can then also help them to have an effect on that force. A big part of the training is learning how to breathe in a certain way. At the very beginning, people who study Tenaga Dalam have to first learn how to control their breathing, and that in turn helps them to focus on the energy. You might be thinking like, duh, everyone knows how to breathe, but it's a bit different. One part of it is only breathing in and out through your nose. Another part is breathing deeply down into your stomach. There's also required lengths, so something like breathing in for however many seconds, holding it for a certain time, and then drawing out the exhalation for another few seconds. So it's not just your body's automatic breathing, it's a more conscious act. If you think about it though, the idea of controlled breathing isn't really something all that unusual. It's not uncommon. Especially if you've done yoga or martial arts or meditation, then you've probably learned how to control your breathing too, because it helps you perform the movements correctly and comfortably. Even with something as basic as running, it helps if you know how to breathe in a certain way. Apart from focusing on breathing, the Naga Dalam practice also uses something called a jurus. So jurus are specific body movements, which are usually, but not always, in a martial arts or self-defense capacity. For some teachings of the Naga Dalam, the use of the different types of jurus is more to help the person focus and control their breathing. So it might be jurus number one is to stand in this position, and then jurus number two would be to change to a different position, and then it just keeps going. In the more martial arts-based Naga Dalam groups, these jurus can be actual stances and fighting positions. And finally, another thing that many groups also advocate for is to practice while barefoot. And there's a couple reasons for this that I read about. First is because it encourages a direct connection from the energy in the body to the earth. And second is because it makes the feet stronger and increases sensory perception while at the same time decreasing the chance of injury. So people who practice the Naga Dalam can manifest their energy, or maybe their control of energy, in a few different ways. For example, they can become physically stronger, or they can use force to deflect someone or keep them at bay without actually touching that person. I even read this one article about members of Indonesia's Special Forces Command, which is known as Kopassus, who used the Naga Dalam to find the locations of deceased victims in a mudslide in a place called Banjarnegara in central Java. In that same article, the reporter also writes about how Kopassus members have helped find the location of a plane crash on Mount Salak in West Java. This was done by focusing on the energy from the plane's metal, which would stand out on their quote-unquote energy radar. I'll talk about this next, as well as the decades-long history between the military and the Naga Dalam a bit later on. So practitioners of the Naga Dalam develop a more intense form of awareness linked to the energy around them. Because different objects have different energies, the Naga Dalam makes the practitioners more in tune with things in their vicinity and able to sense objects or people without the use of the five senses. You're probably familiar with something called the sixth sense. Not the movie, though that is very good, but the sixth sense I'm talking about is usually described as an intuition or awareness that's unexplained by normal perception. In the case of the Naga Dalam, that sixth sense is actually the capacity to sense energy on its own without, you know, seeing it, hearing it, touching it, tasting it, smelling it. And like in the M. Night Shyamalan movie, some people even say that they can sense unseen beings with the help of their Naga Dalam. Because what are unseen beings really, but just another form of energy, right? I'll talk more about the connection between Naga Dalam and unseen beings in a little bit. But before I get to that, there's another skill that I want to tell you about, and it's pretty fun. According to people who learn about Naga Dalam, different colours have different energies, and when people start training, they then start to recognise the energy of a specific colour without seeing it. In some Naga Dalam groups, this is actually something that the students are tested on. What happens is, the person who's being tested is blindfolded, and then different colours are held up, and that person has to say out loud what that colour is. Another way to test this ability is, again, the student's blindfolded, and they have different coloured objects spread out around them. The person then has to make their way to each colour that's requested by the teacher. I've also seen this done in a video on YouTube in a kind of obstacle course where they have to also avoid knocking into poles and stepping on objects, remember they're blindfolded, as they're making their way to each different coloured object. And then check this one out. This one's my favourite. Let's say you print out a letter of the alphabet in a large font onto a piece of paper. The idea is that because there's a difference of energy between the white of the paper and the black of the ink, as long as that font is large enough, the blindfolded person should be able to differentiate between the two colours' energies. This means they can sort of read blindfolded. How wild is that? So if you're a follower of Archipelagos, you'll know that I lean towards the skeptical side of things. So I have a hard time getting my head around this particular concept. But do you know what else is pretty wild? Have you heard of something called synesthesia? To put it really plainly, synesthesia is when one sense is simulated and another sense also gets an impression. For example, some people with synesthesia can smell colours or taste sounds. Who knows, maybe synesthesia does have an unknown connection to Thnagadalam. Now that we've discussed the what and the how, I wanted to talk a bit about some of the actual groups who practice Thnagadalam. There are actually a lot of groups or schools that follow different kinds of teachings on how to build up and use inner energy. And these groups are spread all around Indonesia with varying degrees of size. One of the biggest and probably most well-known of the groups is the one that my dad joined for a while. It's called Satria Nusantara. Translated, it means knights or warriors of the archipelago. But there's another meaning for that first word, Satria. It stands for Sat, Tri, Daya, which means 6, 3, strength. This represents developing the 6 senses to obtain 3 types of strength. The strengths are physical strength, mental strength, and strength of faith, because followers of Satria Nusantara also say certain prayers while they're training. In Satria Nusantara, the attention is focused more inwards, towards yourself, where you're practicing to promote your own well-being and positive energy. It's all about improving yourself on the inside. Related to this, they also say you learn how to defend yourself against disease and even black magic attacks. This is known as santet in Indonesian. But apart from these handy skills, they can also learn how to help heal others who are sick. And don't worry, I'll talk about this more towards the end of the episode. With Satria Nusantara, however, one of the main things to remember is that the practice is always on the defensive and never on the offensive. It's about protection and health and well-being. It's not about fighting or gaining uncommon advantages for yourself. Just like when you learn martial arts, there are levels to advance up and gain more control of the energy. In Satria Nusantara, all beginners have to go through an initial 5-day training. And at the end of that training, there's a process they have to do called Pasak Bumi. This means earth spike. It's the process of spinning in a circle to neutralize your body. With one foot on the ground and turning on the spot, the other foot is used to periodically push off the ground to gain momentum while turning. I don't know if I did a good job describing that, so just imagine a person spinning like a top. Once the Pasak Bumi is performed, the body is cleared of negative energy, which can be disease or black magic like I mentioned before. And the body's reaction to this clearing out of negative energy is also varied. Some people might throw up, some people might start bleeding, and some people might start convulsing or acting strangely if the cause of that negative energy is supernatural. So that's a little bit about Satria Nusantara. There's another big group that's also very well known, and it's called Merpati Putih. This translates to white dove, but it also has another meaning. It's a phrase in Javanese turned into an acronym. By the way, Indonesian people love acronyms. But the phrase is Mersudi Patitising Tindak Pusakane Titising Hening. It means searching until truth and calmness is found. Unlike Satria Nusantara, Merpati Putih is actually a martial art, and the use of the Naga Dalam for them is only one part of the practice. Merpati Putih is said to have originated hundreds of years ago from the Kraton, which you might remember is the name for the royal court in central Java. Remember that special forces command that I mentioned earlier? Well, the Kraton are said to have shared their knowledge, this martial art using the Naga Dalam, with the Indonesian military back in the 1960s. But due to its popularity, it was then introduced to the general public in the 80s. And like Satria Nusantara, Merpati Putih also has levels and chapters around Indonesia. Now, apart from these two, there are lots of other groups that practice different forms of developing inner energy. Some of them integrate varying amounts of religion or martial arts into their practice, as well as types of movements, breathing exercises, and focus on the Naga Dalam. Some teachings use more prayers and religion. So, Indonesians are generally religious, and being the largest Muslim country in the world, it's no surprise that most of the Naga Dalam practitioners are Muslim, and obviously they use Islamic prayers. They're usually pretty simple, short prayers that people might recite throughout the day, like a form of cultural habit. For example, you might say a prayer before eating, or driving, or going to sleep. On the other end of the faith spectrum, some Naga Dalam teachings might require anything from meditation, fasting or special diets, talismans, and even susuk. Susuk are the charms that usually take the form of needles and are inserted into the body to make you rich or good looking. So some of the teachings that include these last few elements are commonly regarded to be the type of Naga Dalam study where people want to gain something advantageous for themselves. They might want to be really strong or have magic or powers. They might want to get good fighting skills. And they also might want to help promote a relationship with jinn or unseen beings. Jinn are said to sometimes ask for certain conditions to be met in exchange for their supernatural help. It might be something like the jinn or unseen being requesting that the person meditate on a certain mountain, fast for 40 days, and then make an offering. In return, the practitioner of the Naga Dalam might then get one of those advantages that I mentioned with the help of that jinn or unseen being. But I feel like I should stress that the vast majority of people who train in the Naga Dalam are doing it for their own health and well-being, and not for those supposed supernatural purposes. And so that brings me to the last portion that I wanted to talk about in relation to the Naga Dalam. And that's when it's used for healing. Having the Naga Dalam training doesn't automatically give you an ability to help heal people. It can be dependent on the person, how advanced they are, or even if healing is a priority of theirs in the first place. The healing process still incorporates the breathing method and by focusing on the negative energy in the afflicted person. With their hands, the Naga Dalam practitioner will make motions as if they're trying to pull that negative energy out of the body and then throw it away towards the ground. Another way to help someone is to lay the hands on the area of the body that's affected and to focus on the pain or negative energy there. Some people say that they can feel warmth as if the hands of the person using their Naga Dalam had heating pads attached to them. For a lot of people who study Naga Dalam, this type of healing isn't meant to be a cure-all or like a miracle drug. It's supposed to be an additional therapy, so it's to help the body on its way to mending, but used along with any medicines the person might be required to take or other therapies and procedures performed by doctors and medical practitioners. So, some people might give grand promises that they can't back up, and of course, some people will probably believe them. But from what I've seen and read, most people do understand that Naga Dalam healing is to be something that helps the body to mend or be receptive to healing, but also be complementary to regular medicine. So on that optimistic note, we've come to the end of today's episode about Naga Dalam. I hope you've enjoyed hearing about another aspect of Indonesia's supernatural landscape. You can connect with me on Instagram and Twitter at Archigos, and if you have any questions or comments, I'd love to hear from you. Also, if you haven't already, please do subscribe on whichever podcast app you use and spread the word. I'd really appreciate it. And thanks again for listening to Archipelagos.